Morning. Well, I'm rested a bit and ready to face the fall surge, which what's going on nationally suggests that we're in the early stages of that. So the rates of COVID-19 are going up steadily in the United States, with some real hot spots in places like Wisconsin and North and South Dakota, areas that were previously less affected. But nationwide, we've gone up about 15% in the last 2 weeks in terms of case numbers. And in Washington State, we're at a much lower level compared to many other states, but it is creeping up very slowly in Washington State. And actually, over the last 2 weeks, it's been a 9% increase. And so statewide, we are at about almost 85 cases per 100,000. Fortunately, it's much lower than that on the Olympic Peninsula. In Jefferson County, we're actually listed at being 0% on the Washington State website, which unfortunately is not true any longer. Last week we were at 9.4 cases per 100,000, and now this next week, we'll update the statistics today, but if my math is correct, we will go up to about 18.8%. So we're still below that 25 per 100,000 threshold that we're trying to stay behind, but we're creeping up to it. Clallam County is exactly at that junction. So their rate is 25 per 100,000. And Kitsap is the highest of the three counties at 61 per 100,000. So they're still dealing with a number of outbreak kind of situations, although the St. Michael Hospital outbreak now appears to be over. As we prepare for the fall, we're also working very closely with schools. Jefferson County was one of the very first to open up for in-person education in the state. We'll now be in our fifth week of in-person education. And I'll be meeting with the superintendents tomorrow morning, and we have some detailed protocols as to how we evaluate students or staff who have COVID-like symptoms. And I'll go over those a bit with the KPDZ questions, and that I did receive a question about that. And it's very much a work in progress. So we're evaluating and modifying these things as we go on. And it looks like we'll make a major revision in those protocols this week, based on some new information, but I'll try to cover that in just a moment. Some good news, the South County Clinic is now open for COVID testing. So that's something that's been in the works for a while, but now people can, by appointment, can go to the Quillacene Clinic and get samples collected and sent off through our regular route. Certainly in my absence, it's been a very interesting week nationally with the what I think can accurately be called the White House super spreader event. These kind of things are real opportunities for public education, unfortunately also for misinformation. So we really had a mix of those two. Hopefully the education overbalances the misinformation. I think the most serious bit of misinformation is that the president's uncomplicated recovery somehow indicates that this is a trivial illness, because the evidence suggests anything but that. He was certainly the beneficiary of state of the art medical care, which unfortunately is not available to most people in the country. But that case did illustrate that medical therapies are improving dramatically and survival rates are going up. And that's very good news. But still, 5 out of every 1,000 cases succumb to the infection and die of it. And we're also very concerned about issues of persistent disability, that immunity may not last very long at all. All we really know at this point is it probably lasts for 3 months. But beyond that, it's very uncertain. And if SARS is any evidence, and it probably is, immunity to SARS only lasts for about a year. So the hope is that the vaccines will be engineered in a way that will produce better and longer immunity than the natural infection does. And that's technically possible because of what you can do with vaccines. So I'll move on to the KPTZ questions. We had a number of really good ones this week. First of all, there was a question about the Safe Start Washington program and when will phase two counties be allowed to go to phase three. And we don't know. That process of submitting applications for phase three was put on hold literally on the day that Jefferson County submitted theirs. And that hold, that pause, has not been released. What has happened is that actually last week the governor made a number of modifications of the program where things that were previously only allowed under phase three are now allowed for phase two counties. So a number of things have opened up in Jefferson County, like libraries, and movie theaters at 25% occupancy, bars or restaurants can serve alcohol up to 11 p.m. instead of 10 p.m. I think those are the main ones. And there still are some differences between phase two and phase three. Movie theaters can be at higher capacity in phase three, and wedding receptions can be larger, and phase three counties can hold retail events that phase two can't. So there are still differences between the two. And we're waiting for some word from the governor's office when applications can be entertained. But right now, the differences between phase two and phase three have been diminished. So that's really what we know at this time.
Can I follow up on a little bit on that? We have a Board of Health meeting this coming Thursday, of course. And I'm wondering, I guess right now, I appreciated the kind of the loosening of the phase two restrictions last week. But do you think, would you advise that we are safe enough to move to phase three right now, if you can answer that? And if so, do you think that the county would benefit from advocacy if the Board of Health concurs with that? Advocacy to the governor's office.
I have not researched that enough at this point to really tell. I think actually some of the recent changes that the governor made, for instance, increasing wedding reception sizes, may actually be quite unwise given what we know about transmission. So I think that to the extent we did it, we'd have to be really selective about it, and consider the individual risk factors. But there are some phase three things that seem to be safe in Jefferson County. So it's very much a it's kind of a complex question, and I'll have more information about this by the Board of Health meeting. So I'm doing research on that this week, and we'll try to find out more specifically from Department of Health what the plan is. Are we really on an indefinite pause, or is there going to be some kind of process? But certainly from a numbers standpoint, Jefferson County has kept their numbers really low. And a lot of people need to take credit for that, or deserve credit for it. But it's also crucially important that we maintain that, if for no other reason than to keep the schools open, which is vitally important. And so it's going to be a complex calculation, as having a larger restaurant occupancy, is that worth risking school closures? Those kind of things. So we'll wrestle with those. I'm sure the Board of Health will be involved and will be one of the venues to kind of debate those kind of balance and trade-off issues. So there was a question that asked, what number of days would I have to quarantine if I was exposed to a symptomatic COVID-19 person? And also, when would I show symptoms? When would I be most infectious? So all really important questions. The first one's easy. Anyone who's exposed to a confirmed case of COVID-19, and that's irrespective of whether that case has symptoms or not, needs to be in quarantine for 14 days. And that is, not going to work, not going to public places, really restricting activities. And it's of note that a number of national figures have violated that quarantine rule and have jeopardized the people that they're around by doing so. As I hope everyone realizes at this point, a negative COVID test does not rule out COVID infection. It only rules it in. But the 14-day quarantine is very important. In terms of clinical course, people are most likely, if you're going to develop symptoms, it's most likely to start at about day 4 or 5. And usually a person is infectious for about 2 days before they develop symptoms, and then 2 to 3 days after they have symptoms. So peak infectivity is around 7 to 8 days after you develop or after you are exposed. And that's actually also the time that your test is most likely to be positive. And then if you're fortunate, symptoms will diminish over the second week, and by 10 days after symptom onset, you'll no longer be infectious. If you're not fortunate, you'll get sicker during that second week. And that's when we see people needing hospitalization and more advanced treatments and ventilation. So that's becoming a pretty consistent pattern, is the second week is really the critical time for whether you get better or you get worse. There was a question about face shields, this kind of face shield called the Humanity Shield, which is a plastic face shield that has a cloth collar around it, and asking if this was indeed approved by labor and industry for people with medical exemptions, and it is. So labor and industry allows this. However, the health officer order that I issued in early August does not allow face shields categorically. So I've been reviewing that issue and essentially trying to get information from the manufacturer of the Humanity Shield as if there's really any evidence as to how effective this is as a source control device. Because the cloth fringe on the face shield does not fit tightly up against the head. And so it seems like it's pretty clear that it's not as good as a face mask, but that one is still under review. We're not citing businesses at the current time where people use these so-called Humanity Shields or these cloth-fringed face masks, but plain plastic face shields are not allowed in Jefferson County, either for employees or for people just going into a store. They do not achieve the source control objective. There was a question about schools. As a mom of school-age kids in school, I've heard if a child goes home from school with possible symptoms of COVID-19, they must isolate 10 days at home And then when can they return, and what is the testing protocol? So being one of the first in the state to actually do this, we had to kind of come up with our own protocols that were as consistent as possible with the state guidelines. And what we came up with is essentially a two-track system, that if you develop COVID-like symptoms, the best thing to do is be tested. And if you test negative and your symptoms go away, then you can go back to school. So you go back to school within 24 hours of symptom, or after 24 hours after symptom resolution. And that's the way it's worked for most students and staff. If the parents elect to not test the student with symptoms, then it's a full 10 days. We treat them as if they have presumed, we treat them as if they have presumed a COVID infection. And as of this week, we'll be modifying that somewhat, in that we're not all symptoms are equally predictive of COVID-19. Some symptoms like fever with cough or chills or new loss of sense of taste or smell or sudden onset of shortness of breath, those are highly suggestive of COVID-19. Other things like headache or nausea or diarrhea, those are nasal congestion. Those are much less suspect. So the new protocol it's a little complicated to explain, but it makes sense on a flow chart where you have to have, three symptoms of the less serious type in order to need testing. And for most of these mild symptoms, we'll allow kids to come back to school 24 hours after the symptoms go away. Because we're seeing that quite a bit with students, as they, as you would expect, they have these very mild illnesses that disappear in 24 hours, and we don't think we need to test all of them for COVID-19. But we have to have a very high index of suspicion, because we want to keep the schools open. We want to keep the schools as safe as possible. So that's a tricky issue. Two more questions. One is just how long does it take to get test results? And they're pretty much in the 24 to 48 hour time. Usually people are told it will be 2 days, and it often comes back sooner than that. You know, we're seeing test results usually around 36 hours. It actually depends somewhat on which courier it goes out with. There's a morning courier and an evening courier. And if it goes out with the morning courier, we'll sometimes hear the result by the end of the day. But it's virtually always 48 hours, which is much better than it is in a number of areas of the state. The hospital actually has the capability to do this test in their lab, but they have a critical shortage of the reagents that you do the test with. The manufacturer just can't make enough to supply everyone who wants them. So they really have to ration that and use it only for the highest priority tests. But theoretically, you can do a test in a couple hours in Jefferson County if it's a high enough priority. And then finally, there was a question about community and private pools reopening. And that was addressed to some degree by the changes the governor made on October 6th. So they didn't make a lot of change. It's still in phase one and phase two. Water recreational facilities are by appointment. And the reason for that is to control the number of people who are there at a given time. So there are occupancy restrictions. And that's actually one of the big differences between phase two and phase three. Under phase three, water recreation facilities are allowed to operate at 50% occupancy. And there are a number of restrictions in terms of, you know, whether you can use showers or not, and how far apart the lanes have to be, and how many people can be in a lane, and So it's, I think it's three pages of instructions that deal with water recreation facilities. So they are open under some circumstances, but it's very restrictive. And we don't really know much about COVID transmission in those kind of settings, although we have not seen significant outbreaks in pool settings up to this point. We're actually much more concerned about the shared showers and those kinds of things, because in home settings, we definitely see transmission with shared bathroom facilities. So that's probably higher risk than the pool itself. So I think that's it. I'm through the questions and ask if the commissioners have any.
David King?
I would just say, I think that in terms of the question Greg asked earlier about phasing, I think it's a little hard for people to understand that as Jefferson County has maintained one of the lowest incidence rates, to see other counties with higher incidence rates in phase three is a little complicated. I think Board of Health is where we'll talk about this, and it sounds like you'll bring a little more analysis, Dr. Locke. It was really a matter of timing, which is unfortunate because that's a hard thing to explain to people, that process. But I am hearing a fair amount of consternation about that. And yet, as we see our own numbers start to rise, I think that the question of how much do we kind of double down on the safety that we've enjoyed, the protection that it offers, versus I'm glad to see we'll be able to open libraries. I haven't heard actually if the libraries plan to take advantage of that 25% capacity, but just curious to watch this unfold and hear your analysis on what direction we should take, if any.
Right, and there was a very arbitrary nature of the way they cut things off, and I find myself personally sort of annoyed that Thurston County, they got in on the last day, and then Jefferson County, which actually had a much better application, at least from a numbers standpoint, didn't. But it was just, they admitted that it was arbitrary. So hopefully they'll be more flexibility in this. I think, though, the bottom line is that the governor really felt, and with good reason, that that his original plan was not working. That the reopenings were actually stimulated or allowed this huge July surge that occurred in the state. And so until that, if we had succeeded in really crushing that curve and bringing it way down to baseline, then there'd be no question that the whole state would be moving towards phase three. But we didn't do that. We've only been able to bring the surge about halfway down, and then it starts to creep up again. And Jefferson County is in a really unique situation with our proximity to Seattle, and the fact that a lot of our cases are spillover from other counties, that people, relatives visiting from other counties or under other states are leaked in to our cases, or people traveling to other areas of the state. So our proximity to these hot spots is not insignificant. It means that we're always at risk of outbreaks occurring. And we're actually changing some of our approach to this. We're focusing much more on outbreaks and super spreader events, because we realize that it's probably 10 or 20% of people are spreading 80% or more of the disease. So we really need to get better at finding that super spreaders.
Was there anything significant about the news stories we were seeing last week about an increase in understanding about the airborne nature of the virus?
Yes, I think it's significant. It's obvious. CDC has been reluctant in agreeing that it's airborne. However, the the evidence is really strong to support that. But what's important, it's airborne in these super spreader events. So the average airborne risk seems to be very low, and that's why there's been so much scientific debate on that. But there's now the evidence of large outbreaks that can only be explained by airborne transmission is undeniable, and sort of brought people around to agreeing. And it's made masking more important, because masking is not only offers some personal protection against airborne spread, but a lot more significantly, it reduces aerosols that are emitted. So if you're wearing a mask and you happen to be a super spreader and don't know it, you're much less likely to set off an outbreak if you're wearing a mask than if you're not. That clearly at this point looks like what happened in the Rose Garden, is there was one or more unmasked super spreaders and a whole bunch of people got infected as a result.
Which is worrisome, because that's outdoors where we think that's less likely to happen.
Yeah. And that's why distancing is also extremely important, including outdoors.
They were indoors as well. I think the ceremony was inside, but they did have a big group inside.
Yeah, very true.
Thank you.
Can talk a little bit about the character of the cases in the last couple weeks. I mean, are we still looking at mostly out-of-county transmission, or can you speak to the character for the last couple weeks?
Yeah, the out-of-county and household transmission. But mostly links to out-of-county or out-of-county visitors. So a common story we hear, not only in this county, but around the region and the state, is visitors come, they stay, and then after their visit, they learn that they've been exposed to someone who is positive, and then it turns out that they were an asymptomatic carrier during the period of their visit, and you know, we test their contacts. Although we only have a few cases at any given time, we usually have 20 or 30 people we are following as contacts at any given time, and that's paying off, because we are finding cases among contacts. We test all contacts, usually at about the midpoint of their quarantine, and we've had that turn up cases a number of times, and that's a success story. That's what we want to happen.
You have a question, Nick?
The governor indicated that he was going to extend the eviction moratorium last week, but didn't give details in what changes there might be. Do we have any knowledge about that?
I haven't seen that. I'll look into that. Okay, but I have nothing's come across the sort of the health related things I get. But it certainly has health impacts. In terms of homelessness and the risks that are associated with that. So, but I'm sorry, I don't know the details of that.
Yeah, he said it was coming, so we'll see.
And then regarding schools, Dr. Locke, you know, it seems like it's been pretty safe so far in Jefferson County. I'm wondering, on a statewide level, have there been any worrying trends as more schools open, or has it been pretty safe?
Well, the hot spots have been in college and universities, and that's been a really difficult to control sort of thing. Actually, not many middle and elementary schools have opened up, so we don't have a lot of data yet. We have some worrisome things elsewhere in the country, but those are in very, like New York City, where my grandchildren are, they had to back off on their openings. It just started up right away when they reopened their schools. So they're kind of regrouping. We're tracking that very carefully, but we don't have good data at this point. We're just so early on into it. But we will. We're trying to. This is something we have to be prepared to modify what we're doing on a week by week basis. So far that's why I meet with the superintendents every single week, and the kind of rules of the game are everything's up for grabs. You know, if we need to change something, we will change something. We don't let anything get frozen in place.
Great. And my last clarifying question is, one of the KPTZ questions about testing incidents and how we have so many tests, but I just want to, I guess, clarify that many of the tests that happen are because of procedures or not necessarily symptomatic cases or, you know, contact tracing. So there's a lot of reasons that we're getting tests, correct?
Right, exactly. It used to be that everyone who got a test would have symptoms. Now, it's much more like if you're a contact or if you're going to have a procedure, and that those you know, 50 to 60 tests pending, that roughly represents the number of tests being done every day. And that's kind of a good amount. That's what, when the hospital asked me that, how many tests should we shoot for on a day, there's some formulas for that. And for Jefferson County, it came out at 60 a day. Is a good amount of tests for us to be doing. That says that we're doing adequate surveillance for a population of this size.
Great. And how many are we running currently?
Right around 60 a day. You know, sometimes more, sometimes less, but it's averaging around that.
Great. Well, keep digging, Jefferson Healthcare. We want to know. Yeah, it feels like a success when you can find someone that is isolating, that is infected. You know, that's just good case context. All right, any other questions for Dr. Long? All right, we'll pass it off to Willie Betts. Thank you, Dr. Long.
Thank you, Commissioner. So the Emergency Operations Center, we remain activated, but we're right now at the lowest level we have been during this response, especially when compared to where we were at in March and April when we were at the height of this. So we're still back pretty significantly, but we're still monitoring, we're still kind of remaining readiness, especially as we prepare for a fall surge. Specifically, what this means is our EOC stakeholder briefings, we've reduced to just one a week on Mondays. And what this means for the kind of general public, for those of you that have been following along with our DIPRETs, what we released to kind of have some talking points, updated news, that kind of fun stuff, that's been reduced to just once per week. So those will come out on Mondays. You can still follow those on our website and on social media. But you know, previously, we were releasing those every single day, then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and now just kind of one a week to keep up with the flow of information as it slows a little bit. That being said, though, again, we're maintaining our activation just to maintain that state of readiness. We're ready to ramp those back up if needed. But again, the hope is that everyone continues to do their part and help prevent this from blowing back up to the point where it was, again, back in March and April. The one good piece of news I have to share from the Emergency Operations Center is that thanks to some lobbying on the part of local county emergency managers to the state EOC and Department of Health, we've received permission to help supply the school districts with PPE and sanitation supplies. Previously, they were not on the Department of Health's tiered priority list, and therefore we were unable to provide them directly with PPE. School districts were having to source it through commercial vendors. I know a good portion of school districts across state pooled resources to place one large bulk order, you know, save costs, meets the minimum order threshold, that kind of stuff. But the state EOC has recognized that, especially in smaller school districts like ours, they're not able to go out to some of the larger vendors. They are lower on the priority list. some of the larger school districts. So we're allowed to supply them in emergency situations if they're unable to find a commercial vendor, or if they need PPE or sanitation supplies more promptly than some of their other channels. So we're reaching out to them today. Our logistics section is going to be working them on a regular basis moving forward. I know that was a question that the KPTD listeners had submitted not too long ago. How are we ensuring that our school districts are properly stocked? And previously our hands were tied just a little bit, but I really do commend the state and EOC leadership and DOH leadership for letting us work with them. So that's another layer of protection in case our schools run into an emergency. We'll be there to assist them if and when needed. That's mostly it for me from the EOC. Again, we're primarily at kind of a monitoring phase right now. The bulk of the work is our friends at Public Health and our friends at Jefferson Healthcare, so we really tip our cap to them. The last thing I want to say while I'm up on my soapbox is that the Great Shakeout is this Thursday. For those of you who don't know, the Great Shakeout is one of the largest earthquake drills, not only in the state, but in the country, and actually it's moving nationwide. So on 10/15 at 10:15 a.m., you're all encouraged to drop cover and hold on and actually practice what you would do in case there was an earthquake. I regret to inform you that the Cascadia subduction zone isn't going to pause any major rupture because we're in the middle of a pandemic, so we still have to think about some of the other bad stuff that might happen here in the Pacific Northwest. So head to our website, jeffcoeoc.org, or shakeout.org, specifically shakeout, so you can register yourself as participating, learn more about what you can do to prepare for an earthquake. And again, on 10/15 at 10:15 a.m., it just takes less than a minute of your time. Drop cover and hold on. Practice that muscle memory, build that muscle memory in preparation for an earthquake. And then if you're willing and able to, do something a little bit on top of that to help prepare yourself. Update your emergency kit, talk to your family about earthquake hazards, maybe strap down a water heater or something like that in your house. And I've been really encouraging folks to take a lesson learned from the coronavirus disaster and apply it into other areas of their own personal preparedness. And I think one of the big ones is we all kind of learned how boring and the lockdown was and how tough it can be to be in isolation. So maybe throw a few packs of cards or some books into your emergency kit for entertainment purposes, that kind of stuff. So I just really encourage you to all participate this Thursday. Go to shakeout.org to register. And always fun to participate in the shakeout. So had to plug that real quick. Any questions for me?
Great. I have one question for you, Willie, and then I see Kate has one. And maybe this is a question for Dr. Locke, I'm not sure, but as we see cases rise through the Midwest and the West, do you see any trend lines that give you any concern about PPE or testing supplies going forward, or are we over that hump?
So we're not quite over that hump, unfortunately. This was very much a problem early on in this disaster where our supply chain was absolutely overloaded, and it was very tough to get PPE, adequate PPE into this county. I don't believe that we're going to face a situation like we did back in March yet again. But however, we haven't ramped up production enough to be able to truly meet any worst-case scenario. So that's one thing our planning team is doing, is keeping an eye on supply chain issues. Obviously, it's not just manufacturing here domestically, but internationally, which affects our ability to get PPE into our local area. So it has improved. We haven't had any issues acquiring PPE. However, we have built up what I feel are some pretty decent PPE reserves, both at our partner agencies, and we've been holding on to some here at the Emergency Operations Center, specifically because, again, I don't think it'll be as bad as March if we have a major flare-up, but production hasn't ramped up enough to the point where it's going to cover a worst-case scenario.
Great. Thank you. Kate?
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's anything happening at the courthouse with the Great Shakeout, or is the Shakeout and the Great Shakeout both virtual?
Yeah, so unfortunately, just within DEM, we've been so tied up with the coronavirus response and other day-to-day issues, we're not really able to put the time into the great shakeout that we've had in years past and can really hope to this year. So really, I'm going to encourage all city, county staff, and really everyone in the community to participate at their own level. Whatever they're willing and able to do, they're encouraged to carve out whatever time out of their day they can. Virtually, of course, just because everyone's life is kind of a little bit topsy-turvy right now, so we have some working from home, some working in the office. What I'm really encouraging folks to do is just at 10:15, drop cover and hold on. I'm really encouraging them to take that one small little step, and then whatever else is really just an added bonus, because we have to recognize that the other disasters aren't going to pause because we're in the middle of one, but also recognizing that people are pretty burnt out by this point. I don't want to depress folks too much by talking about another catastrophe. So really, whatever folks are willing and able to do, I'm going to consider that a win.
Thank you.
Sorry, go ahead, David.
You mentioned March. We had issues finding enough places for the homeless and used the options out at the fairgrounds. With fall coming and flu season and people being indoors and people wanting to open up more, we could be back in that place again where we don't have enough appropriate shelters with social distancing. What's the plan from your point of view, if that should reoccur?
Yeah, so we're looking at identifying some additional facilities, because that was the big obstacle back in March, was finding proper facilities. So we're basically working with them and talking on what other options are on the table. We haven't been able to decide on a specific plan quite yet, but we're still in the process of surveying what facilities might be available should that arise. I think I mentioned previously that one thing DEM does have in its back pocket is a good relationship with the American Red Cross, who do maintain agreements with facilities across the county for disaster shelters. So if it came to that point, we would look at leveraging some of those existing facility agreements, that we have throughout the county, to be able to safely shelter folks in an emergent situation. However, the difficulty is that those kind of disaster shelters are usually at schools or churches or places like that, where we want schools opening, churches having some sort of maybe some in-person services. It's hard to maintain a shelter for weeks at a time. But right now we're still kind of working on identifying some proper facilities. Although Holy Cow, for example, is doing some good work making their existing facility a little bit more safe. I know they've been consulting with public health and writing PPE and barriers and that kind of fun stuff. So upgrading existing facilities and then and still work on trying to identify a new one.
Any other questions for Willie or Dr. Locke? I guess I'll just make a, it looks like the state has stopped burning. There's only a couple forest fires around. Is the prognosis for the next couple weeks enough rain to hopefully keep the skies relatively free from smoke?
Yes, very much thankfully. And actually the rain we
This is KPTZ, and we've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 and the earthquake drill, live from the Jefferson County Board of County Commissioners meeting at the courthouse. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org, kptz.org. And again, thanks for listening.